This is On the Commons with your host, Shu Bartholomew. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone.
My name is Bill Davis. I am an attorney. I've been asked that several times today. I happen to practice patent law. So, in a way, this is kind of in my alley because of my area of practice relates to restrictions, the right to exclude other people from doing certain things. But we, myself and the Hamburgers and several other people in our subdivision, started finding ourselves in trouble when we wanted to know where the money was going. Why weren't we getting financial reports? We started asking questions and very quickly found ourselves the target of selective enforcement and a few other uglier things. I'm just going to run through this kind of quickly because I wasn't really sure what everyone else was going to be talking about. But we happen to live in a declarant-controlled community. A declarant is somebody who establishes the subdivision and basically records restrictive covenants. They're always highly favorable to the declarant. But some of you may live in the older neighborhoods, but for those of you who don't, these declarants, particularly down on Sierra Plantation and Fort Bend County and some of these other places, they're not just going in there to build homes. They're going in there retaining control of the place for decades, if not indefinitely. Homeowners are being forced to consume services they may not want. They're forced to pay prices they never agreed to. And we're kind of having that problem, in particular with water and propane gas. Other people are going to be having that problem with water, gas, electricity, because you're in a deregulated area now. I'll move on from there. Just a quick background, I think someone else brought this to light. This information is from Community Associations Institute, our favorite authority on community associations. But the point is just to show the huge rise in the number of associations between approximately 1970 and 2008, roughly 40 years. You might hear that people want them. I think there's other pressures that create the generation of these things, mainly municipalities trying to eliminate their financial liability while maintaining a tax base for all these homes. The breakdown is approximately, of these community associations, about a little over 50% of them are in homeowners associations, like single-family home homeowners associations. About 40% of them are in condominiums. So those are the two biggest components. Co-ops, I'm not sure we really have in this part of the country. I think they're primarily up on the East Coast and Northeast. I haven't seen it all on the West Coast, and I don't know of any in Texas relating to homeowners, not of the kind that we're used to seeing. Here's what this is all about. It's about the money. As noted on the slide, the real estate value, well, at least until fairly recently, of all the homes and community associations was approximately $4 trillion. Okay, that was the estimated value. That's a pretty big chunk of change. The operating revenue is more than $41 billion. There's a lot of service providers chasing after that. The types of things you might find are, property maintenance, or mowing the lawns. Some HOAs are involved with utilities, lighting. They may be involved with repairs. They all purchase insurance, so they're a big purchaser of insurance for both the property itself, for the directors. You have the management companies that provide various services, billing, accounting, enforcement, collections, and of course the attorneys, which is a big source of the legal expenses. Now, associations, many of them also hold what's called reserve account for taking care of maintenance for future items like the roads and things of that nature. You'll see more of that support later on. I took part of this from some work that Barbara Carr did up in Dallas, but she was pointing out where the different types of functions and the potentials for abuse. And I think in our subdivision, we're seeing virtually all of these. utilities, you have kickbacks, or the developer will own or be affiliated with the utility company. Deregulation is a good thing as long as the consumer has a choice, but it's a terrible thing when the decision is made at the association level and all the members are basically disenfranchised from having any say. And, of course, the arrangement usually provides some type of kickback to the board members. We're experiencing this right now. Management companies receive funds. Well, there's been a number of stories this past year, I think Shu can speak to this, regarding embezzlement. In a lot of cases, it's been kind of kept low profile because talking about it harms property values. That's your excuse for not telling people. Or diverting money. You'll find many of these management companies, particularly Associa, will have bank signature cards that on the back side of the signature card will say that the management company has the right to receive the funds and to credit them to whomever they choose, even if they're affiliated with the management company, without depositing it into the bank account. Okay, so the HOA never knows that the homeowner paid. The management company is sitting there receiving the money and crediting it to affiliated entities with the management company. Most of these deal with a kickback situation where the management company or board member, someone has the authority to make the contract, gets some type of financial benefit from it. There's a fellow by the name of Robert Metcalf who's often said that it isn't necessarily always money for the board members. Many of these, currency of trade for the board member might be ego. The currency of trade for the management company is always going to be money. Same with the attorneys. Record keeping, they lose records. It's often to their financial benefit to lose records. Falsify records. Collect assessments, accounting, contract construction projects, legal representation. Avery, I'll skip on to the next slide. These are very common. I mean, I think all of us are experiencing one or more of these. The closed meetings, the closed elections. We have a management company that charges for a website and advertises that all board meetings are open to the public. They're not even open to the other members of the association. They're certainly not open to the public. Closed records, proxy voting, that's a big one. We're not permitted to vote any other way other than proxy in our subdivision. We never agree to any such thing. It's a way, it's clearly a way to rig the elections is to ensure one group always stays in power. Many of these associations have adopted rules prohibiting disclosure. We've gotten complaints from people who said, oh, my condominium association has created a resolution where I'll be fined if I talk to the press, news, radio, or anything about what's going on in my condo association because that harms property values. Direct billing. This is another area prime for abuse. The management company and the attorney, they usually kind of work in tandem, will directly bill the member. And so people have, the association has no idea of fees that their members are paying, and there's no tracking of how much money is flowing from the members of the association to the vendors. Private fining, huge area for abuse. I'm all for abolishing that entirely. The priority payment scam is a real big one. And then disenfranchisement is, I'm sure that's a word, but it looks kind of long to be a real word, but that's what's happening everywhere. Yes?
Okay, I want to ask you about, now there's another something that our association has just started or trying to get past, they may have already done it, where it's 3-5% transfer fees when you...
we're going to get to that. Yes. Okay. I'm putting this slide up. I realize not everybody can see this necessarily, although it might be kind of small, but the point is to show why there's a huge problem. Senator Corona, I'm putting his name up there and I'm no fan of his, and it has nothing to do with party affiliation. I'd like to see him in jail, okay? But what I'm trying to show, even if you can't read all these, is he owns about 80 different management companies. It's hard to track them because when he gets them, he then merges them and changes the name. So there were often more, and then the number shrinks, but yet he's expanding an area of geographic practice. He's just renamed them. These are all subsidiary management companies of Senator John Corona. They're subsidiaries of Associa, which is owned by Senator Corona. Corona has also created community archives, which he owns. He just went into banking last year. He started First Associations Bank. He started Associations Title this year, which is kind of interesting because if any of you keep up with the Dallas paper, I'm from Austin, but Corona actually went out in the news like all by himself and accused Craig Watkins, I believe it was, of a conflict of interest because he's a DA and he had a title business he had run for years on the side, which was kind of a small thing. This is, Cronin did this after, while he's a sitting senator, after he himself opened up a title company this year. I mean, it's just amazing. Associate power. Some of you may be experiencing this now in Houston. In deregulated areas, what he's trying to do is to move into HOA-controlled areas and basically force everybody to consume power from him, have a decision made at the board level. You'll find that most of his tactics and most of the people in this industry are to put as much power as possible into as few hands as possible, because you have to corrupt that many fewer people, okay, in order to bind everybody.
How do we get that list?
Yeah, we need
this
that
list.
Yeah.
I'll give you a copy of the slide.
Great.
Community Association's website. This is his web hosting company. Where if you if you're an association that his management company will come into, you'll find yourself being billed for this community association website. And by the way, I hope none of you are using that site. You might go check it out. It's actually quite insidious. They will send letters to people inviting them, encouraging them to use the website, sign in for registration. But you find out that once they encourage you to put down your kids' birthdays or names, things like this. If you read the terms of service, they call it the privacy notice. It's actually the total lack of any privacy whatsoever and our right to sell your information to whoever we choose at any time. Basically, they sell that information. Okay, so anything you use through their website, they do sell. Insurance, HOA insurance, director and officer liability insurance, premises liability insurance. You'll find that your association is probably making payments to association policyholders or association's insurance. He owns both of those. Okay, these relationships are not revealed. Okay, whenever his management company contracts with an association.
Bill,
yes.
Tell him about the bank and what it's for.
What it's for? Oh yeah, it's a rather unusual bank. The only business that this bank is willing, and the only clients that this bank will take, are HOAs. That's it. I mean, have you ever heard of a bank in today's times, especially that limits its client base to only HOAs? It's kind of unusual. I think it actually only limits its business to HOA reserve accounts, which is even more unusual. Here's an example of self-dealing. I'm going to pick an associate because they're in our neighborhood, and they're probably in more than a few of yours, and I know they're very active in Dallas. This is one of the top things in their list, the very first things they do when they come in, self-dealing. Agent is required to assist the association in matters relating to protection of the project against risk. They're going to recommend insurance coverages, you know, more is what they're going to recommend. Prepare insurance specifications for bid proposals and secure bids under direction of the board. The management company knows what the association is already paying for insurance, so they're able to underbid, or they know exactly what the price is. These are not competitive bids. And I guarantee if you're in an associate neighborhood, your insurance premiums are always going to be paid to one or two companies that John Corona owns. Okay, this is not a competitive, and this is not going to be revealed. Okay. I'm sorry, I didn't read the wrong one. Contract self-dealing. Here's another example. This is in our management agreement. And by the way, these are kind of hard to find. It's part of the closed records deal. They don't like to reveal these things. In the event of an extraordinary loss of $1,000 or more, which involves a claim under insurance, managing agent shall receive from association a separate and additional fee equal to 10% of the amount of any insurance claim settlement received by the insurer. Now, you might say the remainder of that sentence says, hey, they're only going to get that as long as the damage can be fixed. But I tell you what, insurance companies don't generally pay an extra 10% on top of what it costs to fix it. You're lucky if you can get brought up to being made whole. And the people that make this decision is the management company, which has no incentive to, which, you know, they're going to tell you, oh, yeah, we got our 10%. They don't do it. This is a windfall. This is, we get 10% for, this is the very insurance policy we sold you, and we're going to get 10% of it if you make a claim under it. This is not a deductible. This is an additional deductible. Now imagine if you went to your State Farm agent or Allstate or somebody else and said, hey, I had a car accident. He says, okay, I'm going to charge you 10% in order to help you process the claim. That's actually a criminal offense if a licensed insurance agent tries to do something like that. Okay? Here's another.
And the other thing, though, is that provides an incentive for the management company to say, suppose it's your clubhouse, okay, and part of the clubhouse burns and you need to get $20,000 worth of repairs done. So they submit a claim to the insurance company for $20,000. the insurance company says, sure, as long as you use one of our approved contractors, go to the approved contractor, and then, well, the contractor does what they want to do, and the insurance company says, all right, I mean, the management company says, you are now going to get $18,000 for this work, and we are going to get $2,000 for your work, because we get 10%. So do as much as you want for $18,000, and we will certify that the work is complete. How many of you believe that your clubhouse will actually be fixed the way it was supposed to be fixed?
Yeah.
It's quite a record.
Is that a kickback?
Contract self. Here's another example of contract self-dealing. I mean, this one's actually pretty important, and it's becoming more of an issue that people are becoming aware of. Managing agents shall prepare resale certificates. I never heard of such a thing until after this organization infiltrated our HOA, a resale certificate. They also, for a fee not to exceed managing agents' current published rates, which they don't publish them anywhere, this transfer fee, which fees shall be paid by the seller, grantor, or the unit. So HOA has no idea how much this is, but you go try and sell your house, and associates are going to show up at the table, and they will not hesitate to jeopardize the sale of your home in order to collect these monies. And the only people who know how much you pay are you and the title company.
Can I make just a quick note here?
Sure.
One of the folks in our subdivision had a condominium that was governed by this, and at the closing there was only $10,000, and they never did find out for what. But to get that deal closed, they had to give them an additional $10,000.
I know, and they thought they were safe, so they went out to the countryside, which is where we live, and Alliance became the next managing agent for that place, too. Okay. This is where you start having some real danger, is the association authorized the managing agent to request, demand, collect, receive, and receive, or any and all charges or assessments which may at any time be or become due to the association. Well, those other charges are legal fees, handling fees, collection fees, and the association will never be charged those charges. They will never be presented a bill. They do this direct billing gimmick where people have to pay the management company, and it's not real clear whether the management company is acting as agent for the HOA or agent for itself. Let's see here. There's a CAI lobbyist in Austin who, if she's she works a lot with Alliance, and if you're late in her associations, you will be charged $600 as a late fee. It does not go to the association, and typically not as a late fee. I'm sorry, as a collection fee. So this money, the association doesn't get the money. Also, if you don't pay the total amount that's due, Alliance associate will collect a late fee every month that accumulates every month that does not go to the association. He's made no investment whatsoever, but through the use of these financial tools, he basically just accumulates late fees on your property, which you will have to pay if you want to be able to sell your home. Or if you get foreclosed upon, you don't have an opportunity to challenge it after the foreclosure. You have to pay it in order to redeem your home. Okay, here's an example of legislative self-dealing from the same senator. This is what the YouTube video was about. If anyone ever thought it was about anything else, it's definitely about the money, certainly for all the vendors. Senator Corona authored it was originally called the Winona Blevins Property Owners Protection Act. It was due to some pretty outrageous behavior by the law firm of Bartley and Spears against Winona Blevins here in the North Houston area. So Senator Corona offers the Texas Property Owners Protection Act, and this is actually just a very small part of it. This says, foreclosure sale prohibited in certain circumstances. A property owner's association may not foreclose a property owner association's assessment lien if the debt security lien consists solely of, says, fines assessed by the association or attorney's fees incurred by the association solely associated with fines assessed by the association. Well, keep in mind that Senator Corona authored the Property Owners Protection Act. You really think a guy that owns 80 management companies and is making just, I don't know if anybody could put their finger on it exactly, but it has to be in the end total, at least tens of millions of dollars, if not hundreds of millions of dollars a year. What's that?
We're going to look at the house.
We're going to look at the house, okay. It's just purely extortion is what it comes down to, because what it does, this is the priority payment scam. As far as I know, I'm the one that coined the priority payment scam, but we found ourselves having to go to the county clerk's office on a regular basis to find out what was being filed and essentially being made a restrictive covenant by virtue of calling it a resolution or whatever else. What Senator Cuomo's companies do, standard operating procedure, is they'll have the board execute a document like this. I didn't even show the whole thing because it wouldn't fit on the screen, but basically, they will apply any money that you pay first to non-assessment obligations, including fines, late charges, return charges, attorney's fees, user fees, damages, regardless of what you write on the check. Okay, so the point is, you pay your assessment money, they apply to something other than your assessment, so the property code provision that's supposed to protect you from this practice does not apply because you're not being foreclosed upon solely for failure to pay fines. You're being foreclosed upon because you didn't pay your assessment because they just declared that you hadn't paid. You know what I'm saying? You'll find that the fines look rather low in this organization, but the collection fees add up, and the monthly the fines may go to the association, but the late charges, return check charges, that's whatever they charge, not necessarily what the state authorizes. Attorney's fees, user fees, damages, those do not go to the association. Yes?
I got a question. Is this guy, does he send his people, does his company send the residents letters saying, hey, you're late, or we have to charge you for a bill back or something?
He does send letters like that, yes.
He does, okay.
Well, and at some point he usually works with a select groups of attorneys in the cities that he operates in, and if you don't, you'll first get them from his company, and then you'll start getting them from the attorneys.
Okay.
There's several of them in Houston, but there's a few of them in Austin as well.
Does he have any ethics violations filed against him, Senator Plum?
I believe people have tried to pass in the Senate, but it's a pretty corrupt situation, so I mean, I think...
Any ethics violations filed against the Senator Plum?
Yes.
And they didn't do nothing about it.
I thought everybody could get behind.
Because there are no ethics law in Texas. That was just in the paper. That all the politicians palling around with these people that they shouldn't have relationships with if they were really being above board. But because the laws don't make them stop doing that, they're very weak. Very weak.
Well,
there's also an instance where they'll hold your check and say you never paid.
I know that one.
They will cash your check and then it will still show that you owe money.
You know, the funny thing about it.
No proof that you paid.
The thing is, I have gone with witnesses that have dropped it off on the 15th. My payment's not due until the 1st of the following month. So I'm 15 days ahead, and they put it in on the 6th. And then they're going to send me a late charge saying I paid late.
I hope you put down your hands for
company. That's happened to us a lot.
On the registration form, because we're trying to track some of these rather unscrupulous characters.
Bill?
Yes?
Does anybody ask for a receipt when they take their check in and leave it?
They probably won't give it to you.
Well, they don't have to give you one.
Well, we have to now send ours to Arizona to his bank.
Yeah.
So
Wait. Arizona, the Community Association's bank.
If it is Arizona.
Well, it's actually, that's not his. That's often referred to as CAI Bank. But that bank, a lot of people don't know, went to receivership in July. Board members didn't tell or were informed not to tell the membership. They went into receivership, and they were picked up by Mutual of Omaha. Okay? And yet this is a bank that Corona was recommending to everybody, and you have to wonder what was going on. They were also the bank that had these signature cards with the statements on the back that, oh yeah, the management company can divert funds and things like this. I want to tackle just very briefly, I don't have any more slides on here, but I mean, what I'm trying to focus on in part is, I mean, there's a real problem with the legislation that's going to have to be tackled. You have to know who your enemy is, and he really is an enemy because you are his prey. He sees every HOA out there as a feedlot. He has infinite hunger and greed, and you will not... In 2006, he was trying to sort of grease the skids for some horrendous legislation called TUCA, that would have turned virtually any neighborhood into a mandatory HOA. Mandatory HOA means more vendors, more accounting, more insurance, you know, more lawsuits. At any rate, Gwen Gates worked real hard last year to get open records in Clear Lake. It's kind of interesting. Right after that passed, they had to start changing some of their vendor contracts, like the trash, right? Well, there was a lot of opposition to her bill, and I'll tell you where I think it came from. Her HOA was a real special case. It was probably one of the only HOAs that had no members, only funders, okay? And so they were able to tailor the legislation to where it dealt with only HOAs that had no members, but only funders. Well, there was a lot of opposition to this, and I'll tell you where I think it came from. I think most of it came from CAI down in Fort Bend County, because a newer model that they've gone to is having this foundation organization, which is separate from the HOA. They'll both be controlled by the developer or declarant. Maybe easier just to call a developer, although they're not always technically the same. And Ascena Plantation didn't want anyone to have access to what was going on in these foundations. The foundations are extracting multiples of the assessments out of people every year. You're talking $700,000 to $1 million a year that's going into this foundation. That foundation controls a lot of vendor contracts, which guaranteed they're affiliated with the developers. Okay, they're for-profit vendors. And I believe that's one reason why we've got so much opposition, because the model was you had an HOA that had no members, only funders. And that's exactly what these foundations are. You're not a member. You're obligated to fund it, but you're not a member. Last year, just this last legislative session, Senator Corona, there was some legislation proposed in the House that passed the House. That's a spider. That passed the House, that his purpose was to, they call it stopping a scam. There was actually a person in near the Austin area who was selling this business plan to where you would go put a restrictive covenant on your own property so that each time your property was sold, a payment would be made to you, okay? And he would actually buy these from people, and although he was in Austin, he was running a company in Florida, okay? Well, the title insurance lobby group, ATLA or something, Texas Title Insurance Group, I don't know what they're called, said, hey, this is a problem. We don't know where these people are. We can't pay them. We can't fix these closings. So they proposed some legislation to halt transfer fees that made it to the House. In the Senate, Senator Perona changed it into an enabling act to allow. He liked the scam. The owner can't impose such a restrictive covenant. An HOA can impose. Now, keep this in mind. The HOA doesn't own your property, okay? It doesn't own your property. These foundations don't own your property. But he put in legislation that allows, that authorizes, it actually outright prohibits, if you read this, I don't know if you can see it. It says, a deed restriction or another covenant running with the land applicable to the conveyance of real property that requires a transferee of real property or transferee's heirs, successors, or assigns to pay a declarant or other person imposing a deed restriction or covenant, blah, 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 is prohibited. Okay? Well, what the left hand giveth, the right hand taketh away, because it says, this section does not apply to a deed restriction or other covenant running with the land that requires a fee associated with the conveyance of property in a subdivision that is payable to a property owners association. So the HOA can impose one. Or one can be imposed and made payable to the HOA. It can be made payable to the managing agent. Geez, Corona had no conflict there. Or to an entity organized under Section 501c3. I didn't have this on the chart, but guess what? Senator Corona opened up Associa Cares because he cares. It's a 501c3 corporation, okay?
Corona Cares.
What year was that? January 1st of this year. I believe what he was doing was protecting what's going on. Seeing a plantation, Riverstone, and a bunch of other places where they're now charging transfer fees of at least a half a percentage of the sales price of the home. These people didn't agree to this. This is being imposed upon them not by homeowner-controlled communities, but by declarant-controlled communities, or by, in a homeowner-controlled community, by the management agreement between the board and the managing agent. You know, they'll just say our published fees. Well, they're not published anywhere, and the homeowner never agreed to that. But you will not be able to sell your home unless you agree to pay him this money. Okay? There's another provision that I think Amy's going to talk about, but I do want to mention it briefly to show you how insidious this is. There's another property code provision, 5.016, which was not put up there. We can talk about that another time. But one of the newer scams is to force you to have, before you can even put your house for sale, the board will adopt a resolution requiring you to obtain a certificate of compliance. Okay? This is going on down there in Santa Plantation as well. That, if you want to see what ugliness has happened, that's a good place to look. You'll have to pay the management company however many $100 that they charge for a certificate of compliance. That's before a resale certificate. Okay? And it becomes yet another opportunity to shake people down for money at closing. But I don't think I had much else. No, that was it. I mean, we've been trying to track some of this stuff and attack it and try and get a handle on what's going on. But it is all about the money. And I think, although people are definitely concerned about civil rights, I certainly am too, what's profitable for them isn't so much denying you know, rights. The way to attack this, I think, is to attack the economic incentive and to try and remove the profitability of this for them. Because they're not out there, gee, I want to go deny somebody their right to vote. No, it's basically the corruption and graft that they can obtain, the profitability of that. And so I would like to attack the economic incentive for engaging this. Yes?
Okay, they impose tons of fines, right, and transfer fees, okay? Is there a way that you can classify it into the fines as non-profit income,
and
just state income, like it's a business income. You see what I'm saying?
I do. I've often wondered what business. They often say they're in business, they're a company. Well, what business are they in?
Who are the customers? Fines. So that means they owe taxes on the fines, not on the assessment, but on the fines.
Yeah, there's
the income.
There's a difference between, there's several different tax exempt classifications, and just because you have some income doesn't mean you won't be classified as a tax-exempt entity or you won't be considered a non-profit?
I mean, can we push legislation that declares any homeowner association, not the assessments, but the fines, as income?
Not for me, you won't, because I want to see them just eliminated. Yeah. I would not even go so far as to give them that level of authenticity. I don't think any private organization should have a right to impose fines on that.
Yeah.
So I would need
to put them in the trash can, keep the lid on it.
But people have different views.
I mean, I hope you succeed, but if you don't, I think we should tax it as income. And they should have to file IRS tax income for your home.
But they don't care. It's like the municipal company. They can take the money from the soil if they have to pay taxes. They're still going to keep taking money from them. I mean,
just take more.
They have to pay taxes. There are two other things I want to briefly mention, and I think that there's a play in here, and there maybe some other attorneys can talk about this. I think that some of the electronic laws will protect people from the recharacterization racket. I also think that's one reason why an associate doesn't want to accept electronic payments for fines and things like that. The electronic payment laws are different from the check laws when it comes to processing payments. There's something else, too. I'd like, if anyone happens to be in a principal management group or PROCON or PrimeSight in this area or one of his organizations, check your bank statement and figure out if you are being hit with an ACH or debit or e-check type transaction for your assessment payment, even if you paid by check. Okay, that's unlawful, and you could be hit with $1,000 per offense from that. Well, do you remember several years ago something called ACH 21 or Check 21? Where you didn't necessarily get your check back, but you would at least get an image of your check back. You sometimes get your bank statement, you don't get the image. Okay, or you at least get the check or the image. Okay, that's called Check 21. That went in maybe 6, 8 years ago. Well, Check 21, you still have to process things as if it's checks. There are some slightly different variations in how they're handled, but it mainly sped up taking money out of your account. Or how the funds were transferred, it sort of separated the handling of the paper from the handling of the funds. But it's still processed under check laws, okay? Debits, wires, and other types of transfers are not handled under check laws, okay? They're able to get away with this recharacterization scheme under the current check laws. I do not believe they can get away with this under the Electronic Funds Transfer Act. There's a number of different ones, and I just think this is an area that's ripe for There's very few penalties you have against these people. They work hard to make sure you have no recourse. All the promises in the world, there's no legislation that helps you enforce any of these promises against them. But I think that's one area for people that are in this problem. If they happen to be paying electronically, that might be an opportunity. And I would like to highly suggest that no one authorize an ACH from the management company. If you're going to make a payment, pay it from, you can do a bill pay, okay, where you're authorizing it, but don't give the management company carte blanche. When you give them an ACH, auto debit form, you can't cut it off. The only way to cut it off is for you to terminate your bank account. It requires the cooperation of the vendor to do that. So don't, I would just say don't ever give them that blank check into your checking account because they'll take every bit of it more. I don't know. Somebody has something else. We're dealing with the priority payment racket. We're dealing with voting irregularities. We're having every one of those in the hours. And I think it's, instead of being a few disgruntled people, I think this is more the norm and it's happening in virtually every one of these.
We've got a unique HOA, unique neighborhood actually. We've got 5,000 pretty apathetic people that live out there. And a number of people, older people, myself, certainly the board, because they've said this in board meetings, they said, oh, we love it here, we're going to be here the rest of our lives, we'll die here. Right? And that's great. But what they're doing is they're wasting a lot of money, and especially with the water issues, wasting a lot of money, and now they're tacking on 3% for anybody that moves out because they're out anyway, and they're not going to be complaining once they're out.
Yeah,
so these transfer fees, 3% and 5%, and no one worries about it because they're not selling, so nobody's awake yet unless they're selling. And then when they're awake, they're by themselves.
Yeah, the transfer fee thing is going to have to be attacked because it was only authorized by legislation last year. It never even came up for a hearing of any kind, and it was tacked on the legislation that actually prohibited them. And you know what? In realtor magazines, they're advertising this as stopping a scam. And all they did is convert it from a scam that one guy was running into a scam for the management companies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Has
IRS ever audited Corona? I think they need to audit them.
Well, I'm not saying he's not paying his taxes. The problem is he can basically decide how much it's going to take from you. I find this whole thing kind of frightening because you got a legislator who goes around threatening people for having political signs in their yard. He can basically, quash his opposition. I mean, it's kind of weird you have this politician that's in this role. If you want to speak out any way against him, you're going to find yourself a target of fines. There is no due process. There's no equal protection. It's kind of like a lynch mob. And we have, and the mentality, I don't understand the full psychology. We have a subdivision. We have a partner from Full Ride Jaworski who is the president. The guy modified the bylaws to make sure that only people he approved of could run for office. There's a problem there. And Alliance was made the management company could only be changed with a unanimous vote of the directors. Now you have to wonder what, clearly there was some dealing going on between the board and Alliance. Alliance is Corona's operation in Austin. But he would send out these emails stating that the reason the properties weren't selling is because the restrictions weren't being enforced. They needed to enforce the restrictive covenants. I don't know about you guys, but I can't think of a single neighborhood where I've gone around and gone, gosh, they're not enforcing the restrictive covenants. I mean, that's not the first thing that came to mind. Anywhere you went, do you even know what they are? And another thing, the reason I say there's something really weird psychologically about this, our neighborhood was under severe water rationing. We had big signs close to the entrance that said, we'll cut off all your water if we catch you using any. Okay? We had half the subdivision had no streets, no water, no gas, no electricity, and a bridge was out. You couldn't even cross to where they were trying to sell lots. And yet, their reason why the lots weren't selling was because the deed restrictions weren't being enforced. I mean, this isn't even logically, Well, we didn't. But, what we can't understand is why a partner from Fulbright and Jaworski would be so foolish to believe something like that. But,
Fulbright
Jaworski. Board members also tend to be immune from the collection. That's all I have to say.
There are guidelines, and in your little packet, there's some information about 990s, but I wanted to show you these sites. Homeowner associations are usually 501c4 organizations. That's an exempt one of the 501c type organizations. C4 is a social welfare organization. If they make over $25,000, they should have been filing a 990 for the past couple of years. If they don't, after a period of 3 years, the IRS can make them give up their tax exempt status or take it away from them. But I've given you a sheet of paper. It's in your whole packet with a bunch of links telling you what the guidelines are. But as of December 31st, 2007, every organization, there's no limit now. Every organization has to file some, I say every, religious organizations that are 501c3s are exempt. Just read what it says in the IRS about the exemptions. But they have to file some kind of form of 990, which is a form of financial information. It's not an audited financial statement, but at least it gives you some high level. So here's one of the places where you can look online. It's called the National Center for Charitable Statistics. You put the name in, right here, location, right here, estate. And so here's one that I found online that I thought you'd be interested in. The return of an organization exempt from tax to 990, and it's for the Community Associations Institute.
Oh.
The reason why I'm going to show you this, okay, you get your employer's identification number, but look down here where this little hand is. Look how much money they took in that fiscal year. $9,226,825. They can tell, the little lines right here tell you different things that, what the revenue was. Let's see, program service revenues was $4,003,000. Membership dues and assessments, $4,001,000. I mean, this is, it's high level information, but you get an idea of what's going on. Okay, here, statement. See these things where it says C, statement one. Well, here's the numbers, but you need to go to the back to these statements and see what they're talking about there. There's one thing I'm going to show you down here. Oops, did I go too fast? Oh, right here. This little hand right there. And how do I close that guy?
Click.
There. Okay, other grants and allocations. Statement 8. So we have, guess who that money went to? No.
Corona?
No. Oh, I'm going to have to go page by page. Where's the little page thingy?
Down below.
Below
in the middle.
I mean, you'll get to see like revenues. You have to go through and look at this. It gives the officers. It tells how much the if officers make over $100,000 a year, they have to list what the salary is. So the salary's in there for the officer. Okay, yeah, did you see that at the golf tournament? Okay, yeah. Gross receipts for cost of goods sold. I mean, you'd have to look at this. I gave you the link to this. Here's some of their expenses. We're on statement 7, see? We'll go to statement 8. See who this money went to, that $10,000? It was in preparation for the
The battery died.
It was in preparation for the session last time.
Yep, that's where $10,000
That was our money. Can they do that?
That was money that was collected from homeowner associations who paid dues to the CAI.
So the rent would go against our interest and we pay for it.
Yes. Exactly.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, but there's that, what you need to read that piece of paper. There's links. I am not an expert, but I've used them often enough that I can see what's going on. The IRS tells you what the guidelines are, and I've given you all the links to those. This organization, THHR, had to file a 990. But we had to file a 990 in because we had less than $25,000. You file it online. They ask for our FEIN, Federal Employers Identification Number, who the primary officer was, are we still in existence? And that information that the people that file these little bitty e-postcards, is what they're called, it's all available, and I give you a little link on the website. You can look them up on there.
Thank you.
So, I mean, there's some form, if you can't get the financial information, start looking for it online. I've also given you instructions. This is a public document. At the very top, it says, let me go to... open to public inspection. They cannot deny giving you this.
that they can give you grief for asking for it. Mm-hmm. Because we got a lawyer letter the day after I paid my fees to get the copies from our association.
But wait, you're saying these are all online?
Not all of them. Yeah. If you can't find, look first online, and I tell you that piece of paper. Look first online. You can't do it there. You can also go to the IRS, and they have a form you fill that out. But it takes 300 to 400 to go figure from the IRS mm-hmm. to get a copy of that. If you want it for some other reason, the day that you go into the office and you go in and present yourself during normal business hours and say, I want to inspect your 990s, if it's the main mm-hmm. office, I want to inspect your 990s, and I would also like to get copies. They have to give it to you. If they don't, there's a little complaint form that you can fill out and send it to the IRS.
Okay. They can charge you for copies, right?
Like about 20 cents a page or mm-hmm. something. Reasonable charges. I think we were charged 20 cents a page.
And that's at the IRS office?
No. Oh. You go to your homeowner association okay. office and mm-hmm. ask them, I want to see your 990s.
Yeah. Or would that also be a management company?
Yeah, if a management company does all your record keeping. Yeah, but yeah. You know, I want to see the 990s mm-hmm. for this organization. And they have to give it to you. Mm-hmm. If they don't give it to you, then you file them a claim. And it could be that they haven't been filed in copies, so they're not. But their IRS determination letter tells you whether they have to file it or not. And most of the time, yeah, they have to file these on notice. This is some form of transparency mm-hmm. that the IRS wants donors to be able to see. Well, we're donors. We're not really voluntary donors, but we're donors to these organizations. And this is one form of financial information that you can get.
Now, you said if the income is under $25,000, it only came into effect in December of 2007.
Right. You never had to file something.
But you had to file it in 2008 for the year. Is it retroactive to 2007?
No. Okay. If your fiscal year end was December 31st, 2007, any organization after that fiscal year end and has to file some kind of form. The only exemptions are like the... churches don't have to file these. They don't make churches file these. But HOAs, they're supposed to be filing these. Like, I'm in a PTA. PTAs file these. Booster clubs, like a football booster club. You can find all kinds of these online. And those, I give you two examples where to look for them. But if they're not filing, do the math, though. What are your fees? If your fees are $500 a month and there's 500 homes, that's $25,000, and it's gross receipts. It's not like after you take expenses off. It's gross receipts. So if you want some financial information, there's that. Okay, now we're going to wrap up with the summary. David?
Thank you, Gwen. Houston, we have a problem. I guess we've been hearing about the problems all day, but we certainly have some real big problems. And I just want to touch on a few things. I was told I had 5 minutes, so I'm not going to go too much beyond that. But as Bill said earlier, in 1970, there were 10,000 mandatory membership homeowner associations. And back then, there was trouble in paradise. Today, there are 300,000 plus mandatory membership homeowners associations. And guess what? There's even more trouble in paradise. If you talk to the industry professionals, they'll tell you that the reason we're having all these problems are all due to three P's. People, pets, and parking. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, you are the problem in HOAs. Do you buy it? No, I don't either because it's, well, this is working. I have three other P's for you. P for pettiness. Associations can be petty, can't they?
Yeah.
Kent lives in Florida and Kent is having a whole lot of problems with his homeowner, his condo association. And the reason he's having problems is because he's in violation of their leash law. The condo says that you can only walk dogs on 4-foot leashes. Kent has his dogs on 24-foot leashes. And the reason for that is that Kent is an amputee, and he's got two little dogs. So if he had two dogs on four-foot leashes, he'd be flat on his face. But the association has been hounding him and harassing him for 6 years now. They've taken him to court, they're suing him, they're doing all kinds of wonderful things to him, simply and sweetly because he's violating one of their precious rules. Paige was a 12-year-old who lived in Georgia. And Paige decided she was giving up her summer vacation because she loved animals and she wanted to raise funds for the SPCA. So she set up a lemonade stand. Well, guess what? She we don't know what it was, but she violated the rule and they shut her down. They wouldn't let her do it. The other P is power. As we've heard today, associations have a tremendous amount of power. One of the best examples, and we've heard it today so many times, is Winona Blevins. The then 82-year-old widow lost her $150,000 mortgage-free home, which was sold on the courthouse steps for all of $5,000. There's another old lady down in Florida who testified when Representative Rubino went around the state and was talking to different people. She said she was made homeless because her board alleged that she was in arrears of 4 pennies, 4 cents. You could pick those up off the parking lot. Any parking lot you go to and walk around, 4 pennies. They took her house. She never did get her house back. Now I think unless we do something about curtailing the powers and the pettiness in associations, by the way, you have powers and unfettered pettiness and unfettered powers, you end up with a whole lot of problems. Winona got her house back. Kent has filed a discrimination suit, and the Attorney General in Florida is looking into that. But there are a lot of people out there who are not getting the help they so desperately need. I'm going to give you a fourth P just for fun, just to make it a little more interesting. But unless we do something to curtail the pettiness and the powers of associations, get rid of the problems, we will never, ever restore peace in our neighborhoods. And I think the first thing we do is we get rid of the fines, we get rid of the foreclosures. Yep. We limit the powers of associations to just what they're supposed to be doing, which is maintaining the facilities, the amenities, and get them out of our lives.
Right.
Get your lives back, live happily, try to live happily ever after.
On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos. Someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid. All your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone. United, we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years. Stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos. Someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.